I thought a nice place to begin is a question.
Real simple one to answer. Would we like to think of ourselves as being genuine or a fraud and a fake? That's not difficult. We would like to be genuine, not a fake, or other than who we really are. And we would like to do that all the time. All the time. Be who we are all the time. So this is an attempt to question, as you, very nice introduction, how authentic is that, being who we are, that individuality of who we are? There's many, many forces acting upon us that are helping to shape us to be something that may not be who we are. And this is a slide put together by a teenager. I don't know how to do this graphics. But the reference is Bhagavad Gita, and so our real self is the soul, and conformity is like poison to the soul. So conformity has to do with things outside of who we really are. And then there's who we really are. So, to get to become a student in a very good school, like Northeastern is, there's lots of competition that came before where you got, you know, to get here. And many of the things that we do in our life force us to move so quickly from one thing to the next thing to the next thing that we tend to, by just the pace of life, not pay attention to the deeper core important thing within. And it's not, I mean, it's global. We know how to compete. We know how to perform and perform well and excel. We know in athletics and academics and in social and in the spheres of life that are important, we know how to do really, really well. But we may not be doing as well in the area of self-realization. That's partly why we're here, assembled. In the application that you filled out to attend this school, I would practically guarantee they didn't ask a question, how well developed you are you in the path of self-realization? Or when you graduate and you're applying for jobs or there's an interview, they're not going to ask you that question because the value system is different. So we're competing to succeed in a whole other arena that's not necessarily who we are. And in fact, in order to succeed, we sometimes have to appear to be a little bit who we aren't. Let's say in the consumer society in which we live, so much of what sells is how a thing is marketed. So we may, even in our social relationships or so many other ways, present ourselves in a way that makes us like look good or appealing or not too different. Even if we try to be individual, sometimes that effort to be individual is in the category of conformity. So a little slide that says that one is just for getting by in a day-to-day basis, that our real feelings or our real identity is something we, amongst a circle of friends, we may let our hair down and be who we are more, but in the broader social circle, not necessarily being a very, very so genuine in our identity. But that's in part because we have a society that's geared that way. In fact, a lot of what our lives are made up of is fulfilling the expectations of other people.
I'll take an educated guess and say that the persons assembled in this room like to be responsible. I know I like to be responsible. I imagine you all like to be responsible. And then who determines the criterion for being responsible? A lot of it is the expectations of others. This is a slide, again, there's so much to say in each of these. This is a slide that comes from, the statement at the top comes from Karl Marx, believe it or not. In his period of time, just before him, in Europe, philosophers and sociologists and intellectuals were exploring with the idea, it was a trendy thing to explore individuality and socialization process of the individual. Particularly in Germany, it was a very strong picture of this same idea, which Marx picked up and made it into a political manifesto. Communism was based on the idea that he didn't like, the premise was what you see. A man's nature is no more than what is made by his social relations. So he wanted to reconfigure social relations in a way that he thought was more fair. Like, you know, not the capitalist or the proletariat would decide how people would live their life because they had the money and they made the decisions. But he just wanted to reconfigure the social structure. And another picture of the same thing, another description of the same thing, is historians view a great personality commonly in terms of their time. A man is a product of his times, which is another way of saying the same. A man is no more than what he is made by his social relations. And a great man is one who's the voice of the times. Abraham Lincoln or somebody that said something. And their life represented, Mahatma Gandhi, their life represented something of the circumstance of his times, and they were an outspoken spokesperson of that which many people supported, and so they became a great person. The socialization process has an awful lot to do with who we are, our identity. And it begins at a very early stage, like as soon as you come out of the womb. There's family members, and a name given, and identity with the family, and growing in terms of the culture of the family, the expectations of the family, the norms of the family, and it continues. Our social identity is given to us. And we think often in terms of, just like the theme of your discussion for this semester, I am this body. And with the body, I have my position amongst other bodies, and so it goes. Although the Vedic picture is, that's not who our real identity is. And it's those expectations of others, and our wish, on the one hand, to be loved, and to be respected, and on the other hand, to want to show love and respect to others, gratitude to others for all that they've done for us. So it acts in a natural way, in some cases in a very healthy way, to bring conformity, like maintain social norms based on the desire of an individual to wish or hanker for the love and respect of others. And moving in the way that I move with my life, I know that people are sometimes troubled by the expectations of others. Just having a conversation with a couple today, and you know, the issue of the mother and the mother-in-law and the expectations of the mother-in-law for them, and you're not doing enough for me, and it goes on in so many different forms. And it conditions one to do or conform towards doing something that's not really necessarily me, or not even necessarily right. It may be, it may not be, but we don't so much enter into that territory as much as we enter into the tendency, social tendency for conformity. Why aren't we strong enough to resist? Well, we're social beings. We want affection. We want relationships. We want, and we don't. So we're careful, at least externally, and maybe also internally. We're careful how much we're going to even explore who we are. And we have a society that doesn't so much encourage that. I'll say, I think time permits, a little autobiographical thing. How I became involved in the Hare Krishna movement so many years ago. Like all of you, I was enrolled at a university. In fact, I went to, a little bit even going back, I enrolled at a university because that's what everybody does. I didn't so much think about it. I just thought everybody does. You do well in school, and you go to college, and you do well in college, and you get a job, and you know, you're on the conveyor belt. You just do all those things. So my father one time sat me down and said, what do you want to major in? What would you like to develop a career in? And I said, I was thinking I would just enter with an undeclared major, kind of examine things, sort it out a little bit, and then declare a major and decide my career following that. You know, I'd learn a lot more in a college situation than in a high school situation. And he said, well, I don't think I'd like to see you go to college without having a clear idea of what your career path is. And so I said, okay, I want to please my father. I like to serve people, and I like science, so I'll become a doctor. Okay. I'm on the path to become a doctor. Whether that's me or not, you know, I'm on the path to become a doctor. And 4 years passed. I'm in my senior year of school. The United States is at war with Vietnam for some dumb purpose. And the United States government is sending draft notices to my parents, saying, you know, come report, get your uniform and fly off to Vietnam and fight in Vietnam. And I thought, that's really dumb. It's a dumb war. Why do they take somebody out of medical school to go fight in a dumb war? So I just didn't pay attention to it. That was just dumb. The notices kept coming and kept coming, and my parents were saying, you've got to do something. They'll put you in jail for whatever you're putting me in jail for. Okay, I've got to do something. And I'm getting to what this image says. I asked around, what do you do in a situation like this? And some people said, well, the Quakers, they have a nice facility. Well, they'll teach you, they'll guide you in how to fill out a conscientious objector form. And what's that? It's a form that says you don't have to go off to Vietnam. I said, okay, that sounds good. So I got a form, and the first question on the form is, state the nature of your beliefs and your convictions such that you cannot take part in the armed forces of the United States of America. He said, okay, I know how to get A's in exams. I got trained up to do that. Start to fill it out. My pen stopped, saying, wait a minute. What are my convictions? Whoops. I don't know what my convictions are. Something's wrong with the picture, that I'm successful in all that. The first slide, you know, good, achieving, and I'm on the conveyor belt is moving, and I'm doing great, but I don't know what my convictions are. And when that hit me, a light went on, and a siren started to, like, you know, the alarm hit. And then there was 100 other questions I don't have answers to, and I felt a little frustrated and a little angry that, you know, what is this system that I'm part of, and I don't even know the answers to these, like, ABC questions, because it's not encouraged. It's not what gets you into school and gets you A's in exams and gets you by in life and gives you at the end of the conveyor belt where you know who you are. Not important. At least conventionally. So I did a little time out and started asking those questions and did searching and searching, and among so many things that I ruled out, I found some things that made sense. I did those things, and the things that I did, this Maha Mantra made, it was most powerful means of spiritualizing myself, and one thing led to the next thing, and here I am. So it takes the asking the question. So the part of the reason we're not strong enough is we don't ask the question, nor is the society supportive of it. It's not based on authenticity and genuineness. It's based on some other principles. And to be successful, you do those other principles nicely, and you're successful. Although you may not know who you are, and know what your convictions are, and so forth. So, I want to change the sequence of slides. There's something about social relationships that I wanted to put in here. You'll see it later. So, are there options? And very quickly, the Vedic model is, Bhagavad Gita model is, the answers are within you already. Just have to look inside rather than look outside by contemplation and self-awareness and by devotional practices that awaken spiritual consciousness instead of just the other things that are for the outside. Do the outside ones nicely, that's good. And do the inside ones nicely, that's better than good. And then the ones outside take on a deeper meaning. So there has to be, as a spark, a desire to be genuine, to be whatever that means. I want to be that. I don't want to be the other one. I don't want to be a fake or a phony or a fool. So when you start going down that path, you hit another question that is, if the paradigm of life or the foundation of life is material, is that it? Is that a way of being true and honest to ourselves just in terms of configurations of matter and how they line up? So I hope you get the idea. I'm attempting to do what the United States government did for me, which is a kick in the seat of the pants, to ask these questions. And whether it's, you know, by force of circumstance or just like the light goes on, these are important questions to ask. The way that society is set up, it's rare. It's not only rare today, it's especially rare today, but it's true even in the message of Bhagavad Gita. There's a verse in which Krishna says, out of many thousands among men, hardly one inquires about the truth, with a capital T. And of those who know the truth, hardly one knows me in truth. So instead, we're using a marketing phrase, we're consumer units. It's good for the economy that people have similar likes, and you make a product that you make a lot of them so you can make them cheaply, and a lot of people buy them, and then after buying them, they discard them and get new ones. And that's what a good citizen does. You produce a lot, and you consume a lot, and you discard a lot, and you produce more and consume more and discard more. And relationships are like that too. We'll come to that one. So, thoughtful persons, like the persons assembled in the room, otherwise you'd be somewhere else, wish to go on the other side of that way of thinking and way of life. So, and what helps, as already mentioned, is some of those big questions. And here's some of those big questions. Here's us looking with their back to us, looking over here, there's birth and there's death, and in between is life. So what's supposed to go in that space? That's a nice question to ask. And what's it all about? Is there some meaning that goes into that space? What's my purpose that goes into that space? So who am I? And we want happiness. What's the standard of true happiness? I'm giving this example the other day. When I was little, I used to ride a tricycle. I could do it for hours, every day. And then after a tricycle, it was a bicycle. Right? You know, the tricycle wasn't fun anymore, it was a bicycle. And then it was a car. You know, so now I can go back and ride a tricycle for a little while. You know, but not for a long while, because my standard of happiness is something else. So is there like a real standard of happiness? Like, you know, one which you attain, the temporary lesser happinesses or pleasures fade in their significance. Is there such a true standard of happiness? And besides the purpose of other people, what's my personal purpose? I don't mind doing things and being responsible and respectful and grateful. That's nice. But how much am I living my own life, and how much am I living the expectations of others? How much am I part of the conformity game? And the real problems of life, what's the solution to them? It's not going to be solved just by getting on the conveyor belt and being good at it. And when people start asking those questions, then this general idea of our material identity, our spiritual identity, and am I really a spiritual entity? And if I'm a spiritual entity, what's that spiritual reality that I'm part of? Now, this is the slide that goes much earlier. We're social beings. We want friendships and relationships. It's natural. Unfortunately, the consumer economic model of lifestyle lends itself and barges its way into relationships, where relationships become like shoes in a shoe store. We go in a shoe store and try a few pairs of shoes on till we find something that's comfortable, and we buy it, and then we keep the shoes for a few years and then throw them away and get another pair of shoes. And relationships become like that, and we don't like it. It's not satisfying. But that's the atmosphere. It's maybe, you know, maybe an overstatement, and maybe not for the people here in the room, but it's the climate in which we live. It's like that, unfortunately. And it's very unsatisfying. We want to be genuine, and we want genuine relationships. So Bhagavad Gita is teaching, Arjuna is being taught by Krishna, that a false sense of our identity brings a false sense of relationships and our sense of what is responsibility and life in general. When we have a false sense of identity, we're not going to have authentic relationships. There are many ways to say the same thing, but there's a nice way to say it. And when a common situation for someone, like, you know, going along with life, is we have our immediate family and our close friends, and maybe like another peripheral circle of friends outside of that, and our life goes on. And there are others that have a spiritual conception of life, and the boundaries of relationships really expands. Like, I was thinking about this. My family members, they would like me to spend more time with them than I do. And I like spending time with them, but I like spending time with people like you, who I don't necessarily know. But you're my brothers and sisters too, as far as I'm concerned. Although we weren't born of the same mother or father, on a spiritual conception, we're connected. You're my brothers and sisters. And so the sphere of relationships opens. The quality of relationships from this, when one has a spiritual conception, becomes more genuine and more real. Or stated the other way, real individuality is not possible
as long as we maintain a material conception of life. And the message of Bhagavad Gita is like that. We identify the self with the covering, the gross and subtle body. So we have a family, they're flesh and blood. We have our friends, they're like close to us, we relate well with them. So we have a mind, and we have an intelligence, and we have an ego, and that's us. That's the package is not the content, but we identify with the packaging. Bhagavad Gita's message is not the packaging. We can use it, we can act responsibly, in relation to it, but it's not our real identity. So, as these types of questions are asked, it's good. Am I this body or something other than this body? Am I a material entity or a spiritual entity? Life is filled with variegatedness. The material side is certainly very, very variegated. And even the spiritual, the forms of spiritual expression are also variegated. And that's nice. Variety is nice. But in all of that big picture, who am I? Am I a spiritual or material entity? And if I am a spiritual entity, how do I act with spiritual connectivity? Connecting to my family, my friends, society, and the bigger circles and the bigger circles and the bigger circles. How do I connect spiritually? How to do that? The Bhagavad Gita, you could say it this way, it gives a lifestyle plan of the things that you do. Do them with proper consciousness. The things that you do don't have to change, but the consciousness behind the things needs to become elevated. I'm nearly done. I think I'm going to make it within the time. A saying that you probably have heard from Albert Einstein, there's a number of really good ones that he's responsible for. You can never solve a problem on the level on which it was created. So he is certainly one who is an out-of-the-box thinker. And because of that out-of-the-box thinking, brilliant in his discoveries. So we're not saying everyone has to be an Albert Einstein, but his message was go beyond the constraints of that which is expected of you only and being responsible in those terms only and go beyond. I found this image on the web because I'm looking for one that like pierce the veil. I couldn't find one because there's a rock group called Pierce the Veil. And all I could find was, you know, what they're up to. So I found this one. So the eggshell represents all those things that make up our social identity that we've received from the time that we're born and so forth. And while we're doing those things which are nice, what's beyond? Is there something beyond that? Is there something that's part of my real identity that's beyond that? And that's the light looking out into the darkness. So I have a friend that's good with graphic art and photography, so they created these next two. And when that light continues to not just like look around, but go beyond, you get this situation where there's a soul, that's the soul, looking at the behaviors that we do that are part of what our conditioning is, and so we can then select. There are things that really resonate with me because it's me. I strongly like this, by not because I'm told that I'm supposed to like it, but it's me. And so the advocacy here is not anarchy. The advocacy is being thoughtful about who we are, what's meaningful, what's truly important in a spiritual sense, especially. And one of the things that prevents anarchy is reference to standard books of wisdom. So wisdom helps us understand with authoritative references the soul, which is because it's the soul that's animating the body and the mind.
And this wisdom literature, among them, very fundamental, basic, and easily accessible, easy to enter into, is the message of Bhagavad Gita, where constitutionally, each one of us seated in this room, and all the ones that aren't seated in this room, and not just human forms, but all forms of life, all living entities, are spirit souls connected to the same original source. And so our sense of unity amongst diversity is found in that spiritual conception. Almost done. In Bhakti Yoga, that's the message of Bhagavad Gita, the different systems of yoga are like rungs on a ladder that lead to the topmost rung of the ladder, which is the Bhakti Yoga system, which describes the lifestyle, both external and internal, which helps us establish the ultimate connection. Not just a relationship with others, or a loving relationship with others, but a love supreme, that then enriches the relationships that we have with others and helps us be truly who we really are. Another Albert Einstein saying, the one who follows the crowd will usually get no further than the crowd. The one who walks alone is likely to find himself in places no one has ever been. It's not too dissimilar from the previous quote. It's, you know, we can't solve a problem from the same platform on which the problem was created. Follow the crowd and you'll get no further than the crowd, usually. So there has to be some willingness to go beyond the conformity expectations of us, which some of them are good, some of them are toxic, but look at them and then select the ones that make sense, resonate strongly, and then the adventure of spiritual life requires being pretty adventurous and looking beyond all of that, even the things that are fulfilling the expectations of others that make sense to us, and look inside and see what our real identity is. Their practices, the whole yoga system. Some of you are probably practicing yoga of some type or meditation of some type, so you know what I'm speaking about. There's a place or a consciousness or a contentment, an experience that's beyond the race or the succeeding in the other ways that carry people along. This is the last slide. So it's an artistic presentation, so you can say all kinds of things about it. But there's a guy standing here. And we're looking out at the world where there are expectations upon us. That's fine. And we want to be pleasing to other people. That's natural and nice and, you know, warm and goodness. But there's also the self that's behind all of that. And I'm inviting you to consider the importance. When I was going through this thing at college, when I realized that I didn't know what my convictions were, besides being angry at what kind of a system have I bought into, without even thinking about what I bought into, like I don't even know who I am, and that's okay, that's good. I was angry. That's not good. But I also thought, unless I take things into my own hand, I can be on the other end of the conveyor belt of life and still not know. And I don't want to be there. I don't want to be as clueless as I am today about the deeper purposes and meanings of life. So I'm similarly inviting you. Don't let that happen. It's a great opportunity. The university setting, the activities that take place right here in this room. It's like, great. You're exposed to so many other ideas and ways of thinking, and not just shop around and be a good experimenter, but find something that particularly resonates. And certainly we're advocating spiritual sound vibration,
such a thing that happens, whatever else happens in this program, it's this kirtan at the beginning, spiritual sound vibration, awakens the soul. It's like sprouting a seed from a dormant state to a life state, because life is there within a seed. Just sprout it, the chanting, the sound vibration awakens that seed, from a seed, a spiritual awareness condition. And it's very powerful. That the mantra is powerful, and that spiritual consciousness is powerful. It carries over into all other aspects of your life besides the time that you're sitting there doing some nice sound vibration, chanting of the mantra. And that identity of the self becomes more rich and full and fulfilling. All the time. And continue. I was thinking about it as he was speaking. I've been doing this for 44 years. And something happens when you do this chanting for that period of time. And anyway, I'm here to share that with you and encourage you. Make it a part. This is my advice. Make this spiritual practice something that what you do early in the morning, or first thing before you start your busy activities of the day. Bring your consciousness to a spiritual centeredness and connect with that. And do it every day, and every day, and every day. And it grows like a seed germinates and grows into a plant, into a tree that bears fruits and flowers and more seeds. It's fantastic. It works. While you're being responsible and continuing with your career paths and all those other things. It's not, trash those things. It's grow the internal consciousness along with those things. So that at the end of the conveyor belt of life, the light's completely on. You're fully aware. And the act that in the course of doing that, life is far more rich, meaningful, satisfying, and purposeful. That's my little pitch for the evening. That's what that picture says to me. So, look at that. Quarter after. Any discussion? Questions? Comments?
If we're so this whole thing is we're so conformed, since we come out of the womb, we're constantly getting these layers of conformity and all these layers of social convention and everything. And so when we get to this point, we're all, not that old, but we're all about 20 or whatever in that age. A little older, 30, 40, 50. But so what I'm wondering is, how do we begin this process of understanding who we are?
Well, it starts with asking the question. It starts with the desire to know. Because the answers could be given to somebody who doesn't have a desire to know, and nothing's going to happen. So it's an inquisitiveness. Brahma jigyasa in Sanskrit language. Inquisitiveness into that which is absolute. While you're doing the things that are relative in this world and changing all the time. What is it that's unchanging? What is it that's absolute? What is it from which everything else comes? Like I said, that isn't a small question, it's a big question. Maybe it's too big a question to think one can ask, but one needs to ask the questions. There's an inquisitiveness or a desire. I'm speaking here in this presentation of desire for genuineness, because it's something we all share. And how do I be genuine? So just ask the questions. That's where it starts. Like a biblical teaching says, seek and you shall find. The converse is, don't seek, and you'll never find. So,
think, ask important questions along with being successful and performing and all those things. Yes.
Maharaj, I have a question. Right now, being in this room and in this...
It's a nice space, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sacred space.
Mm-hmm. So students come to college and they are somehow motivated to go through the classes and finish and with the picture of what will happen when I finish the college. So here we come to introduce challenging questions. Okay, we are trying to convince the students to challenge themselves, asking what is in this life that I want to do and what makes sense. And when we introduce the spirituality, then some of the students may realize that if they challenge themselves in terms of what I'm doing and what I should be doing and spirituality, they may lose the enthusiasm and then the sense of making their school. Yeah? So some of them may say, well, I don't want to go there because if I do it, then I'm not going to graduate from school. So the picture of my being successful goes down the drain from the materialistic point of view. Am I right? I mean,
the doubt may be there. You're right. The doubt may be there, but it's not. The advocacy is not trash it. The advocacy is, what's the purpose? You know, they don't know you. They know this devotee here. And, you know, he has a job, he has a family, he has a PhD, he's successful, he's, you know, a model of what they might want to be. And you've got a family, you've got a career, and, you know. So, but your life is very spiritual. Your life is very centered on the soul while you, I mean, just like the discussion we just had, your kids and your wife and job and life. Life is there, and while life is there, the light should be on. That's the challenge is turn the light on. Not like, you know, what you're doing is a waste of time. I took my leave of absence, just like autobiographical. Took my leave of absence and said, I didn't have to do that. I had to do that for two reasons. One was I was angry, and I had the United States government on my back, and I had to have an answer, at least to my satisfaction, of what my convictions are, so I can fill out the form and not be a fraud or a fake, or one that gets A's in exam but really doesn't. The show window is full, but the store is empty. I didn't want to. My conscience couldn't do that. But the gun was to my head. I had to do something. But someone else can. It can take longer. So, at a certain stage, I decided I'm gonna not just search. I'm gonna jump in the pool. I'm gonna live in an ashram for a while and find out what that's like, rather than just the outside looking in. And after doing that for a while, the conscious thought came, okay, now I know what that is. I know what it's like to live a fully dedicated spiritual life. Now, do I want to continue my medical career? And there was no reason not to do it. It's not like that's a no-no. So everyone need not think, I can't do my career thing anymore because I got to be spiritual. One can be fully spiritual and fully involved in the things of the world, but not of the world. In the world, but not of the world. It's consciousness that needs to change, not the external things need to change. But one may think like that. I need to trash the external things. It's not so. propensities are to be used in service to the Supreme. The God-given gifts that I've been given, how to best use them in service to the Supreme. It's a consciousness that changes, not the activity that changes. But the statement that you made is a common one. It's discussed in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is thinking, let me stop being who I am. I'll just become spiritual. And Krishna's reply is, no, that's how you do it. You stay in your situation and be spiritual. Turn the light on. Do what you do in service to the Supreme. Learn that lifestyle, that art of living or art of work. Anything else? Okay. Yes.
Could you comment on the relationship between the soul searching and having a genuine spiritual relationship? Because I feel like a lot of the times the impetus to move forward comes from feeling that gratitude for the gifts that are come in your life, and that makes us more and more inquisitive and move forward. But generally I've seen like people become close-minded and then they lose interest when they do not want to acknowledge whatever is coming their way.
Whatever is coming their way in terms of spiritual gifts?
In terms of spiritual gifts, yeah. Like even in the context of this group, I had been thinking that I had been coming here for so many years, and over the years I have seen different varieties of students, and sometimes the students they stay, and there are many who do not stay. And part of the dynamics that I have seen is that like those who are able to really value like what they're getting, they tend to enter into that kind of relationship and then they progress forward, but then others they tend to. So I'm just thinking like it's
the others
also,
tend to do what?
They tend to lose interest or they don't come back.
Well, it can be many maybes. Maybe they don't understand the gift. Maybe they're distracted. Well, you know, saying wow, and then in the next moment, you know, something. And then another 10-somethings, and then just distracted, and they drift. Another may be their spiritual trajectory permits them to receive, you know, X instead of 5X. So they received X. So that, you know, that's an assist to help them go another step in their spiritual trajectory. That's what they can handle. That's okay, that's fine. But there's many maybes. But, you know, the point that you're bringing is it reminds me of what you're asked, the question you're asking reminds me of children. And some children have a sense from my interacting with children. Some children have a sense of feeling gratitude when they receive something. But that's rare. Most children receive something and they just get enamored with the something, and the person who gave them the something, they lost all interest, and you know, they're just absorbed in the something. Because it's selfishness. It's, you know, a very powerful ego thing that I want, and some parents have told me children are just like attention machines. They just like you can't give them enough attention, and if you don't give them attention, they'll let you know it in different ways. They act out, or they scream, or it's, you know, something. They're demanding for attention. But is it about the person and the relationship with the person, or is it you know, just selfish? Hmm. So different. The Bhagavad Gita's message is the more one goes beyond the bodily conception of life, the more one can genuinely be selfless. In the mode of goodness, one thinks about, you know, welfare of others. And the one who thinks, one who is at the soul platform, thinks of the welfare of the soul. But, you know, so to gradually elevate someone to the platform of soul consciousness depends a lot on where the person is coming from. And some persons are more ready for that, and some persons are less ready for that. But there's no loss to give, to feed the soul. Okay. Yes.
I like what you were just saying about selfishness versus selflessness. Okay. And it seems as though, in terms of a man is known by the company he keeps, as one goes forward in the journey, hopefully you get to the point where you're choosing to be intimate with people who are less selfish and
yeah.
more selfless.
It's just natural. It happens naturally. Yeah.
And also to keep yourself grounded as you progress, this, what you mentioned, the ultimate connection.
Yeah.
If that is fixed, then you can take advantage of the relationships.
Yes.
Without being or going off center.
Thank you. Thank you. The idea of sustaining a spiritual paradigm in life, it's wishful thinking without connection with the Supreme. It's at best, it's mode of goodness, and generally mode of goodness gets deteriorated pretty quickly into selfishness. Even when maybe like good at being in goodness, it's still there's anyway. Just to stay in a spiritual paradigm, connection with the Supreme. And then our relationships can be, and our in honesty and integrity can be, as you say, fixed. It's not depending upon circumstance. It can be a very challenging circumstance. It doesn't change because it's fixed. And a very inviting circumstance. We don't get lost in, you know, enjoying the moment and forgetting our, you know, our spiritual connectivity. Because the connection with the Supreme is the foundation of life. That's what we want to get to. Okay, well, we're done. Thank you all very much.